though she's refused to do so. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. Just like we have every Wednesday at 5 o'clock this summer, we have another exciting episode in store for you today. But first, here's your live and local weather forecast. Tonight, there is a severe thunderstorm watch, but it doesn't look like there's a guarantee of thunderstorms. It's 50-50, so stay inside and prep for possible thunderstorms. Tomorrow, it's mostly sunny. There is a chance of thunderstorms at night, but that is only 30%. Friday, we have a chance of showers. It's looking like the rain will continue throughout the rest of the week. But Saturday, we have a nice weekend coming in, 80 degrees, sunny, perfect late summer weather. Sunday, that continues with some nice sun, but don't worry about that yet. As I say, we've got an exclusive interview with Noah Dobson and Mike Colligan this week. It's going to be a really cool episode, one of the most excited I have been for a show this year. So don't turn the dial, guys. Destination Hockey coming right up. From the destination for all things hockey, we'll be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
We have some Islanders news, everybody. After a summer of waiting, I'm here to announce that we have some news. Hope that has got your attention. The Islanders have made a series of transactions this week, including a late afternoon transaction. This afternoon, Derek Brassard will be signing with the New York Islanders on a one-year, one-way NHL contract. The center is going to be 32 years old in September, but he's coming off the worst season of his career. He dressed for three different clubs, the Penguins to start, then a trade in a salary cap dump to the Panthers, and then a sell-off to the Colorado Avalanche for a mid-round pick. However, he still managed to suit up in 70 games, but only 23 points. Not a great season for someone who's put up 60 in his career. However, you got to look at the goals. 14 of his 23 points were goals. Anytime someone can score at that rate, even during a struggling season, they have value. So, in the worst season of Derek Brassard's career, he puts up 14 goals. The Islanders have to replace Valtteri Filppula on the third line center role. Derek Brassard's going to come in and try to put up 20. I think he can. The season before last, he recorded 38 points, 58 games with the Senators, and then he was dealt to the Penguins. He wasn't a pure rental. He still had time left on his deal, but he was a good player for Ottawa. He's someone that can really be a dynamic scorer. He hasn't done it over the last few years, but he's better than Tanner Fritz. He's better than Anthony Beauvillier. He's better than Otto Koivula. He's better than Leo Komarov in that third line center role. The Islanders got the best option available. It was slim pickings, but for a one-year contract, the Islanders got a decent option. The contract, I expect to come in $1.5 to $3 million, a low-level, medium-range contract for someone who can come in and hopefully contribute. His last contract was $5 million. Anything around half of that will work. Lou Lamoriello loves to give out no-movement clauses. That can be something that he gets. Joshua Hosang, moving on, is another player who got a contract, and he has had a knack for the dynamic in his brief time in the NHL.
Hosang opens it up, and Hickey gives it back to him. Hosang scores! Congratulations to Josh Hosang. That's his first career NHL goal.
Joshua Hosang has been really good on his time with the Islanders. I like when he plays. I like when he comes up. He's dynamic. He can shoot the puck. He can pass the puck. He can deke. He can dangle. He's a dynamic playmaker. But he's had quite the history, a spectacle, a chronicle of some really brutal things happening to him. 15 months after he was drafted, Garth Snow calls Joshua Hosang up for training camp. Nassau Coliseum, it's Hosang's big break. He's going to get out of juniors. He's going to be on the Islanders. All he has to do is put up a good camp. He's been compared to Connor McDavid. He's been compared to some sensational talents. What does he do? He sleeps in on the first day of training camp. But he doesn't just get sent down immediately. He's humiliated. Garth Snow and development director Eric Kearns watch him run 3 hours of stair climbs at the empty Nassau Coliseum. 3 hours. Stair climbs. This is some seventh grade punishment. This is a humiliating event for the young forward. Hosang rebounds, though. He tries to come up. In a few years later, he's back playing for Doug Weight, suiting up, but there's problems. Too many overstage shifts. A lot of turnovers. He isn't paying attention to detail. Not playing defense like he should. Hosang quotes, "I got sent down for defense, and what are they in goals against in the NHL? They're last. I only played 22 games up there this year. I don't think it's my fault. They really painted it like it was my fault at the beginning of the year, and I didn't like that." Islanders are the worst team in hockey defensively. Hosang comes up. He is painted as the victim. He is painted as someone that is being blamed with everything. Joshua Hosang was not the player that year that was blamed for it. He should not have been blamed for that. Joshua Hosang is just a troubled person. He's a troubled hockey player, but he has so much potential. He's a good kid. He's a really good kid. But Doug Weight keeps up the relentless attack. Six players are injured, he says. It was the perfect opportunity, and Josh should be upset with himself. Whether our view of the world is wrong, it's something we can argue later. But the fact is, we need to be able to look at how some guys are laying it on the line in Bridgeport, and he's a healthy scratch. Brutal. Absolutely brutal for the Islanders coach to say those things. That's tough for Joshua Hosang. He had to rebound off that. But Doug Waite's fired. Garth Snow's fired. Lou Lamoriello comes in, and everyone has a clean slate. Since then, Hosang comes up with the Islanders. One goal, one assist in 10 games, a really cool play against the Arizona Coyotes in Arizona, a shot from the corner, finds the back of the net. That's what Hosang is known for, the knack for the dynamic, the knack for doing things that other players just simply cannot do. Michael Dal Cole is the other hand of the spectrum. He is someone that came in with big expectations and just didn't have the talent, but he really played well last year. Hosang is more NHL games, more points, but Dal Cole really gained stock last season because I can't argue numbers here. I can't say he put up 20 goals. I can't say he played 60 games, but in 32 games, he put up 7 points. And as someone who was at almost all the games, Michael Dal Cole was a leader, a young leader. The team rallied around him. They loved him. It was a little brother role. Anders Lee, Josh Bailey were hugging him after games. When the yes, yes, yes stick tapped to the fans, the salute after the wins, Michael Dal Cole was in the middle, getting 10 hugs from his teammates. He was that little brother. The team loved him, and he put his heart on the line. Whether it was on the second line or the third line, Dal Cole skated hard. He played a heavy game. He hit. Michael Dal Cole played his hardest, something that can't be said about some other players on the Islanders. Dal Cole might have been selected in the first round of the 2014 NHL draft with the 5th overall selection. He might be considered a bust. But as I argued throughout his entire career, he's a late bloomer. It's too early to call him a bust, and he proved that last year. He's not going to be a 70-point Milan Lucic in his prime player where he's doing something that no one else in the league can do, which is be physical, grind, and also put pucks in the net. He's not the type of player, but in a third-line, second-line role, Michael Dal Cole is a sensational option for the New York Islanders. Those were all the moves that Lou Lamoriello has made over the last week, but we're not done discussing the blue and orange. Top prospect Noah Dobson is here with me, and we will be diving into the life and career of the future Islanders star. From the destination for all things hockey, we will be right back.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterton Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. Joining me is one of my favorite people to talk to, Noah Dobson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to join the show.
Of course. So you have made headlines throughout the year, winning championships, MVPs, and making countless highlight reel plays. But we want to hear from you. How's your year going?
It's another great season. I mean, you have the opportunity to win another World Cup. It's pretty special. I mean, I was fortunate to win one, and now to have two Memorial Cup rings. It's really, really grateful to play on so many great teams the last 2 years, and lots of memories that last a lifetime for sure.
How nice is it to return home and start training after such a busy season?
Yeah, no, it was definitely nice to take some time away from hockey at the end of the season and to spend some time with friends and family. The last couple of years have been hectic with a lot of travel and with all the camps and stuff, and you go through the draft process. So it's been a nice summer in a way, being home with my family and also friends. Just get away from hockey a bit, training hard, and getting on the golf course a bit too. So just trying to enjoy myself and get mentally ready for hopefully another big season this year.
You mentioned the golf course, a few weekend trips. What vacations, trips have you been taking as you unwind from hockey for a bit?
Yeah, no, I've stayed close to home for the most part, but I mean, I go to usually I go out, go across Crimson Bridge to New Brunswick or Halifax and see some friends and get on the golf course with them. But the month of golf, I mean, it's one of my favorite hobbies in the summertime, especially. It's just nice to get on the course and relax and with friends and family too. So it's kind of my go-to throughout the summer.
And a lot of training as well. What is your training routine and how are you preparing for next season?
Yeah, obviously, it's a big summer in the sense that trying to train my body to be able to take the pro level next year. But I'm working out usually six times a week, and I usually get up in the mornings and have a breakfast and head to the gym and get my workout in. I stayed off the ice for the month of July just to rest and train after playing a couple long seasons, but I've just started getting on the ice back again in early August, so now I'm mixing skates here and there after training and stuff. But it's been a really good summer so far. I feel really good about my body and have a couple more weeks left to get ready, and I'll be real confident with the shape I'm in coming in September to New York.
And you've been working with Chris McPhee. He's worked with you since you were 11-year-old. Chris has a lot of familiarity with you and really has done something that not a lot of players do, working with someone their whole life. How does that familiarity, sharing that special bond with someone, help your training?
Yeah, I think it's huge. You want to be comfortable with the person you're working with and just even the relationship off the ice. I mean, you want to be able to go in the gym and enjoy yourself and have a good time with it. I mean, he keeps the mood light. When you can be going through hard tests, maybe able to crack a joke or something, keep the light that way. But he's been great. I mean, I've enjoyed working with him, and now work with sports scientist Chris Munford as well, who's been consulting with my agent. So I've started working with him the last couple of years too, and they've kind of been building my program together and been working together. I can do a program from Chris Munford, who's out of California, but training on the island still with Chris McPhee. So it's been a good relationship with both of them, and I'm really happy with the progress of that.
Munford's actually known for working with pro football and basketball players. How does that new perspective help you grow as a hockey player?
Yeah, no, it's cool to see we were all athletes in one way, and you got to train your body to be an athlete. So it's cool just to see the different types of training that an NFL player, an MLB, or an NBA player are doing compared to NHL. So he started working with more and more hockey players now, but it's definitely cool to get a perspective on the different ways the other athletes around the world train.
Speaking of consistency, you're also training with Jeremy McKenna, a winger who actually traveled to Austria with you, as we talked about in our interview last year. What's it like having such a close friend on your side as you train?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think me and Jeremy are really, really good friends. I mean, our friendship away from the gym on the ice is great, but I mean, even on the ice and when we're in the gym together, we're both real competitive guys, so we push each other to take that extra stride or lift that extra weight and stuff like that. So it's a good relationship to have a guy that's the same level, and you can push each other, whether it's on the ice or in the gym. And I think ultimately have that internal competition with your buddies. That's what makes you better, is you're fighting for that extra inch and stuff, and it kind of gives you that drive when it comes to on the ice. So it's really good to have a really close friend like that. A guy you can compete with in the gym and off the ice and even on the golf course, too.
One of your most touted traits is being mature beyond your years. Everyone says it, from prospect rankers to your coaches and friends. How does that help you as you're training with all of these people create that feeling of shared trust where you can take that off day if you need it when you're working so hard throughout the off season?
Yeah, no, it's important to be honest with yourself and know your body. I mean, especially in my situation with having two long seasons where I played a lot of minutes. So just having that open relationship and being comfortable with the people you're surrounded by is really important. At the end of the day, you want to be training hard, but you also got to be aware of your body. If your body's got a little tweak or a little soreness there, or you're just mentally and physically fatigued and you need to take that extra rest with, like, the past seasons and stuff. So it's important to have that trust in yourself, and you put the work in, but you also got to be smart with it and know your body, make sure you're taking care of it as well.
Relating to that, you will not be attending the World Juniors this year after two incredibly successful tournaments in the past. How will this help you ease back into the off season after having two really good experiences there in the past?
Yeah, no, it's definitely important to my development. I felt with talking with people surrounded by me, just looking at my summer, I felt like it was definitely nice to not have to attend the camp and participate as, like, with all the hockey playing, I miss those extra weeks of training. So it's nice to have that extra week where you're not going to be on the ice and you can get in the gym and you can train hard and stuff like that. So for me, it was important for me to have that and have extra rest as well. I mean, you want to make sure coming in September you're fully rested as well. You're in great shape and you feel good about your body.
For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Destination Hockey. My name is David Lazar. I am your host, and we are here with top Islanders prospect Noah Dobson. Moving on to some specifics from last season, you were traded from the Titan to the Huskies on January 6th. What did it feel like to be moved?
Yeah, it was kind of bittersweet, a little mixed emotions. I mean, Bathurst was a special place to me. I have family ties to Bathurst. I built it with my grandparents and won a championship there. So I always had a special place for Bathurst. But with the situation where the team was in last place, and for my development, I felt it was best to be playing in those big games again and playing on one of the better teams in the league. So I kind of knew it was coming, but it was definitely sad and being the organization, but it ended up turning out to be a great fit. I mean, I played for my coach who coached me the first 2 years, and we had an unbelievable group of guys in our locker room in Rouen. I mean, it's a transition going to pretty far up north in Quebec to a French community for myself being an English-speaking guy, but it was a great transition. I mean, it worked out really well. So, I mean, both organizations were great for me, and I was really happy to win a championship with both.
It certainly was a great transition. You dominated after the trade, notching 36 points and 6 goals in only 28 games. How are you able to adjust so fast after the trade?
I felt like I was playing good hockey before, but just with the circumstance with our team, we were losing a lot of games by a lot of goals. So obviously, your stats are going to reflect on that. And with Rouen, we had a great group. I mean, I only lost one game in the regular season that whole second half, and we were on 25 game winning streak. So things were definitely going well. So that helped. I mean, we had a great group of forwards where we just get the puck to them, and they do a good job putting it in the back of the net. So I think just a little extra motivation, too, being traded, going into a new spot. You wanted to make sure the team knew that they made the right choice. So a little bit of both.
20 players were drafted by the team, with only you and Joe Teasdale as trade acquisitions. That is a truly insane number. You don't see that a lot. So how did that close-knit group make you feel welcome after a mid-season acquisition?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty unbelievable the way the organization and scouting staff has done it up there. I mean, when you have that many guys drafted into the organization, it's pretty surreal, and that's where all that team chemistry comes from. It's those guys grew up together and went through the system together and drafted together, but the whole team was really great in welcoming myself and Joel Teasdale. I mean, it made a really easy transition. Everyone wanted us to be there, and everyone fit in well. So our team chemistry was second to none, and I think that's a big reason why we had success down the road in those crunch games and the big games and the playoffs and the World Cup.
One of those players was Felix Bibeau, a really good player and a really good person as well. What can you say about your potential future Islanders teammate?
Yeah, no, Felix is an unbelievable guy. He was a leader in that locker room. He was one of the guys that was really welcoming for myself and Joel and like entering a new team. I mean, he really showed us the ropes. He was a leader in the locker room, and his play on the ice is speaks for itself. He had an unbelievable playoffs. Really stepped up when one of our top forwards had mono throughout the playoffs, and his game really elevated there. So I was really happy to see him drafted the New York Islanders.
We spoke to him actually on the show last month, and he said that you helped guide him through the draft process, which led him to the Islanders. How great will it be to have him in the organization, especially given that you guys were such good friends during your time in juniors?
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I mean, any time when you're in a different environment that you're not fully comfortable in, yet, I mean, to have a familiar face there is huge. And for myself, having the experience from camp last year, I'm going to be a lot more comfortable. And for him being a first time in the camp, he's probably going to be looking for someone to help him out a bit or just make him feel comfortable. So it's going to be a great relationship to have, and he'll be happier for him to be drafted, and he deserves it. So I'm really happy to have him part of the organization as well.
You, Felix, and the rest of your team, as you mentioned, only lost once in regulation between January and the end of the regular season. Another unprecedented element of that team. After all those wins, what was the locker room like? How were you able to stay focused with so much victory every single night?
Yeah, I think that was our main thing that really helped us, is we were able to, we didn't focus on how many games we won in a row. We turned the page and we focused on the next game to get ready for our next opponent. I mean, we're a pretty honest team. We didn't take anyone lightly, and we knew once puck dropped for the different game, we had to forget about how many wins we've had in a row, and that really didn't matter. We just had to play our game and focus on that game. So we had a real mature team where really it's better than those streaks. You can lose your focus pretty easy with like how many games you want, but we did a really good job of not losing our focus and staying in the moment, and that's what led it to go on for 25 games.
You were awarded the Guy Lafleur Trophy as the most valuable player in the QMJHL playoffs after putting up 29 points through 20 games, another terrific stat line. How are you able to turn up your game up a notch for the postseason?
Yeah, I think having the experience of my playoff run the year before, but I felt maybe the first two rounds I didn't perform my liking, and I kind of had extra motivation from that. And also, just being an older guy and a leader on the team, you had to step up in those big moments. I knew what our team was capable of, and that kind of moved me to take my game to another level and try and provide offense and be good defensively and try and help us win games. So I think I'm a real competitive guy, and as a competitor, I like to elevate in those bigger situations. So just for the group I had, we knew we had something special and we could do something special. So just that extra motivation from that to try and get better and keep producing and do the best I can to help the team win each night.
Just how much more comfortable and, more importantly, relaxed and even less stressed were you this time around after going to the playoffs the year before?
Yeah, it was a lot more comfortable. I mean, not having to worry about the draft and what's going to happen there, and basically knowing that you're drafted to the team and you have an NHL contract and you can just kind of go out there and play and do what you love to do. And, I mean, just the less stress from the whole, like I said, the draft situations, the draft rankings and all that stuff, I felt a lot more comfortable. And having the experience as well, going through a cup run the year before, having that stuff in the back of my mind, just the adversity you go through, the ups and downs, never too high, never too low. So just the whole experience itself and the less pressure and expectations from the draft year and stuff like that really helped me.
Arno Diandro, another potential future teammate of yours, just secured an NHL contract, and he suited up for Halifax in that postseason series. What was it like going up against such a talented potential future teammate?
Yeah, no, he had a tremendous year. I mean, he really took his game to another level and was really deserving of the contract he has, so I couldn't be happier for him. But he's a lot. Played him in the President's Cup final as well, two times in the Memorial Cup. So, I mean, he's a guy we had to look out for. He had really knack for the back of the net. He's a real good goal scorer and could produce offense in different ways, too. So, it was cool playing against him. He was actually my roommate in training camp the year before. So,
oh, wow.
It was definitely nice to be able to beat him, though.
Back-to-back Memorial Cups has not been done since Robert Savard did it in the early 80s. The Memorial Cup, it's one of the most prestigious trophies in hockey. What does it mean for you to not win just once now, but twice?
Yeah, I mean, it's a dream come true for a junior hockey player. That's the goal, to win the Holy Grail of junior hockey, the Memorial Cup, and haven't been able to do it twice. I'm really grateful and fortunate. I mean, the trophy has so much history dating back, I think, over its 101 years. And just the reason how the trophy came about is special. So to have my name on it two times, it's a real humbling, special feeling.
And one thing I really admire was you taking the trophy to the Summerside Boys and Girls Club and Community Connections and sharing it with some really good people there. Just how special of a moment was that to share your moment with other people in the community?
Yeah, it was really special. I mean, those people throughout the community, I mean, you don't get to where you are today without the people surrounded by you in the community and your friends and family. So, I mean, I've had great support for my whole life growing up in Summerside. It's a real tight-knit community, and the minor hockey system was great. So to be able to share the cup with people at the Boys and Girls Club, where I had a summer job for 4 summers and going to Community Connection and see some real special people who really love to see the trophy and put a smile on their face was the best thing of all. So, I mean, just something I wanted to do, just to share the moment with the other people in the community, as they were a big part in helping me get to where I am today.
Truly coming full circle. How does having a job like that, where you're a leader and guiding younger people who need your help, how does that translate onto the ice, where you're also a leader and helping your teammates?
Yeah, I think it definitely builds in, like, your life skills. I mean, just put situations with kids who are fighting with each other, and you got to be the leader and be the role model for them to look up to. And I think it translates to the locker room as well when you're an older guy and have had a leadership role and been the captain and Bathurst and assistant captain. So definitely translate your life skills from sometimes any life experience, like a summer job, that and usually always translates to the ice, so I was able to learn a lot from that and help me in the locker room.
So what takeaways from all of this success and victory will you attempt to bring to the NHL game?
I think just the composure in the big moments. I mean, the NHL is a huge stage, but you got to make sure you stay focused on your game and the process. I mean, just keep your head in it. I mean, playing the NHL one day is a dream come true. So I'm just trying to take all my experiences from that and work hard and put everything together and hopefully achieve that dream soon.
Once again, we are live here with Islanders prospect Noah Dobson, and Islanders general manager Lou Lamoriello does not get too descriptive with the media, but he said, quote, "The defenseman from Quebec, Dobson, has so much upside as far as skill and offense, I do not think we could be more delighted." Again, Lou Lamoriello does not usually say things like that. What does it mean to get such high praise from a Hall of Famer like Lou Lamoriello?
Yeah, it's definitely always nice to hear. I mean, he's such a big part of the organization now, and he's definitely a guy that's going to help me and develop me and help my career get to another level. So it's definitely nice to hear things like that. So it's also a motivation itself to keep trying it better and hopefully one day pretty soon crack that roster. So it's definitely a nice compliment to hear from such a guy like Mr. Lamoriello, who's a Hall of Famer, like you said.
Lamoriello and Barry Trotz, they'll be making the decision on the roster next season. What are your goals going into a training camp where you have a chance to crack an NHL roster?
Yeah, I think my goal this year is to play in the NHL. I feel like I have set myself up the best I could with my past 2 years in junior hockey. Now I've put the work in this summer and just going to camp and play my game and see what happens. But I definitely have a lot more confidence and comfort level going into the camp this year compared to last year. And I'm really looking forward to it. I want to go and prove myself and try and earn a spot.
Does not being eligible for the American Hockey League affect your thought process at all, or is that something you don't even think about?
No, it's nothing really I think about. I mean, I'm just focused on my goals to play in the National Hockey League and not the AHL, right? So I just try and focus on that. I mean, it is what it is with not being able to go play in the American League, but it's not in my control. So I'm just trying to focus on all I control, and that's going to be the summer I have, the training, working hard, and then obviously the camp I'm in September and how I play, and I'm just trying to focus on that for now.
Barry Trotz is a generational coach, arguably the best in hockey, and that was shown last season. What would it mean to suit up for a guy like Barry Trotz?
Yeah, it'd be definitely pretty special. I mean, you'd be able to learn so much. I mean, he's such a great coach. I mean, he's won the Coach of the Year. And just have that knowledge behind you and help develop you as a player and take your game to the next level. I mean, it's a great situation. He's from training camp last year. I was able to learn lots from him and how detail-oriented he is. And it really helped my game going back into junior. So it'd definitely be really nice to be coached by him one day.
How did another successful developmental camp this year help prepare you for a really important fall coming up?
Yeah, it was great to see familiar faces and the same surroundings and stuff, and it helps with the comfort level having another time being in Long Island at the North Pole Center, and the training staff and equipment staff. I mean, the comfort level definitely helps in that way. I definitely feel really good going back into Long Island in September, so I'm looking forward to it.
The defensive depth chart of the New York Islanders is very crowded. They were the best defensive team in hockey last season, going from worst to first, something only done once in NHL history. Are you looking at that crowded elite Islanders depth chart as a challenge, or are you embracing potentially being a part of it one day?
I think I'm not really focused on it too much. I mean, I watch a lot of the games and see how good defensively and the decor is on the team. I mean, it's something as a young guy, I look at, something I can learn lots from these guys, especially the older guys, their experience. I don't really look at it as like something like I'm trying to focus on. I'm just trying to focus on learning as much as I can from those guys. Obviously, my goal is to be a part of that decor, so just to learn as much as I can and do whatever I can to be a part of that D-Corps come this year.
The Islanders as you mentioned, you watched, they had an incredibly successful 2018-19 season. They swept the Pittsburgh Penguins. They proved people wrong. Did you watch the playoffs? Did you watch them kind of come from worst to first? How much did you follow along as you were focusing on your own career?
Yeah, no, I watched a lot of hockey throughout the year. It's my favorite game to watch. I mean, it's so entertaining. How much skills in the game to now, and being drafted to the Islanders definitely gives you an extra team to watch. So I followed them pretty closely this year. I mean, it's pretty significant the success they had this year with the expectations they came into the season with. Just to see the playoffs, how crazy it was, and sweeping a team like Pittsburgh Penguins, who's won three Stanley Cups in the last few years. It's a lot about the team and the group of guys they had. So it's definitely fun to watch and follow them this year.
When you're watching the Islanders games, who are some of your favorite Islanders that you look up to and try to model your game after?
I enjoy watching them all. I mean, there's so much different identities in that locker room, whether it's the role players or the really skilled guys. The whole D corps was able to take things from the whole D corps. So, I mean, they all do one thing or another really well. It's something I can help improve my game. So I didn't try to watch just one player. I just try to watch the whole team and just how they play and the systems they play and just try and learn as much as I can.
Well, that's the Islanders' attitude. And finally, before we let you go, another incredibly successful team in the NHL last year, that was the St. Louis Blues. And the player you most try to replicate and look up to, Alex Pietrangelo, top defenseman, captain, he just won a Stanley Cup. You have taken home the hardware at the junior level, and now you are trying to make the next step. What would it mean to follow in Pietrangelo's footsteps and win the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, I mean, as a kid, you're on the backyard rink, or you're on the streets playing ball hockey, and you're dreaming of lifting the Stanley Cup one day. So it's definitely a dream of mine. It's something I work towards. And obviously, the first step is to crack an NHL roster. So I'm focused on that. And once that happens, obviously, it's the goal to win a Stanley Cup and work towards that. So it's definitely a dream of mine to be a dream come true to do that one day.
That was Islanders prospect Noah Dobson, and hopefully next year he's suiting up with the blue and orange. Thank you so much for taking the time today. It was a pleasure to speak with you once again.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
The sky is the limit for Noah Dobson. Calder Trophy? Maybe. Norris Trophy? Maybe. Stanley Cup? Maybe. Rarely. Do I rave about my guests, but Noah Dobson is one of the most mature, talented, passionate people in the NHL, and his future is bright. Really bright. I'm talking top NHL defenseman level bright. And you heard from him today, but do not forget about him. Dobson will be on the Islanders soon, and once there, the sky's the limit for the young star. Next up, Mike Colligan will be joining me to dive into the business side of the National Hockey League in a unique interview that I'm really looking forward to. From the destination for all things hockey, we'll be right back.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey. We were just joined by Islanders top prospect Noah Dobson, and now Mike Colligan is here to talk about the business side of hockey. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Sure thing. Happy to be here.
So the business side of hockey, something that many people do not understand you have covered in your career. Just how much does money affect the product that we see on the ice?
Yeah, I think it's you know, something that's become more and more common, I think, in recent years as salary cap websites have become almost part of the lingo and part of the conversation. Every media release that you see now for a new player is containing his cap hit, and there's amateur tracking sites to figure out how a certain team like the Islanders can fit all of these contracts under the salary cap. So it's certainly become central to the game, but I think it's always, you know, if you step back and you think about hockey, it's the entertainment business. That's what sports is. And I think like any entertainment business, these teams are operating with expenses, and they're trying to manage all the revenues they bring in from ticket sales and TV contracts and the like. And it really comes down to, can they be profitable? And so I think the league's gone to a lot of extents to find ways to solidify all of the teams, not just the top grossing teams like maybe the Toronto Maple Leafs or the New York Rangers, but make sure that all 31 and soon to be 32 teams have a chance to be successful and stable as they look forward over the next decade.
Television, it's something that's an X factor in the NHL and all sports across the United States. How much of an impact does that have on the NHL salary cap and the money that's in the game?
It's a great one. I think it's something you'll hear about a ton over the next 12 months here. It's not really in the news right now, but as you look forward to this next collective bargaining agreement, there is a TV deal in the U.S. that's due in, I think, 2 years. And at that point, the NHL has the opportunity to take advantage of some leverage that they really didn't have the last time around when they negotiated their deal with NBC. I mean, at that time, if you go back, ESPN had effectively dropped out and said they're not interested, and the NHL limped into the arms of what was really just called the Outdoor Life Network at that point. And so since it's moved on, it's become a pretty successful partnership, but I think there's now so many more options, whether it's streaming, whether it's online, Amazon, Apple, you know, companies that were never in play for some of these major sports broadcast rights are suddenly going to make this a very competitive offer. And I think, to your question, that will have an upside impact on the salary cap. I think if you go out probably 2 or 3 years when this new contract is in play, that will cause the salary cap to take off. We just saw it in the NBA as they negotiated a new deal and saw that effect impact the salary cap. I think you'll see that as you go 2 or 3 years out in the NHL as well.
One thing the NBA has is a limit on contracts, and while the NHL does have that, 7 and 8 years respectively for unrestricted and restricted free agents, and if you're signing with your team, you know, there's all these rules, but there are players out there like Colin White today and young stars out there signing 6-7 year deals that are pretty low value. If the salary cap explodes in 2-3 years, will they find themselves regretting taking a long-term team-friendly deal if the salary cap's over $100 million in a few years?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a risk. I mean, you're really trading off potential upside in the scenario that you mentioned for the stability of a 6 or 7 year deal. I mean, in Pittsburgh, Brandon Tanev was a player that in the past probably would have never gotten more than 2 or 3 years. He's now a guy that commands 6-7 years. Like, these long-term deals for role players were unheard of years ago. Lou Lamoriello has done a few of those, and the Islanders have had a handful, but if you look across the league, that was really not where the long-term deals were going. They were going to the star players, but I think as you look to now, the opportunity for some of these guys to say, hey, I fill a unique role. I have the skill set that you're looking for, and I don't cost $10 million like some of the superstar players are demanding right now. That's something where you're maybe willing to trade off some of that upside for the stability of a long-term deal that anchors you in a city where you can move your family and be comfortable that you, especially with a no-trade clause, aren't going to get traded at any point. So I think it's always evolving. You always see teams as well valuing different things, and the shifting marketplace in a fixed system like a salary cap of the NHL is going to work itself out over time, and you'll see those trends kind of ebb and flow as you move year to year.
There are owners, general managers like Lou Lamoriello, coaches, and various other roles on an NHL team. How do these positions intertwine, and how does the business side of hockey that you cover bring them all together?
Yeah, I mean, if you think of the starting point, it's probably the owners. The owners have the capital or the money, I guess we could call it, the resources. And as you take yourself a level down, you know, typically that used to be the general manager. Now you're seeing a number of teams installing kind of this president's role. So I'll talk of both of those as kind of the manager role. And I think their responsibility is taking that capital, taking that money and deploying it. And so that's usually we think of as player acquisition and, you know, how do you sign free agents? How do you keep the ones that you've already drafted? How do you draft in the first place? But there's also off-ice aspects as well. So while you have a salary cap for player salaries, there is no cap for what you spend off the ice. And so anything is considered, you know, a resource. And you'll see teams like Toronto take advantage of the fact they have so much capital available that they can build best-in-class facilities and attract free agents that other teams can't even compete for. So I think that's the manager role is, like I said, deploying those resources or investing them, I guess you could think of it. And then it's up to the coaching staff to take the resources, to develop them, to tactically put them into, you know, lines or systems or deploying them on the ice. And ultimately, you're obviously trying to win a hockey game. So I think all of those are important, and we probably left the players out of there. But the players themselves are responsible for part of that because there's only so much that ownership managers and coaches can do. It ultimately comes down to now if the players are in the best situation to have success, do they execute and are they able to do that? And I think that's really all what we always tune in to see is the luck and variability of hockey always makes it interesting.
You have covered this topic extensively in the past, and I want to highlight it today on Destination Hockey. What makes a successful general manager?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, in the past, it was probably 7 or 8 years ago, I first started to think about this and wrote an article about it, but I've probably evolved my thinking over time, and especially as the NHL has evolved. I mean, I think it really comes down to, first of all, setting the tone and vision of the franchise itself. So from the top down, and there's no one blueprint. You know, you see so many conversations about, oh, it's a copycat league, and this is how teams are built now. It's the St. Louis Blues are strong and deep and physical, and they don't have high-end talent, and that's how you win a Stanley Cup. Well, there's many formulas, and I think you see many examples, and there's different ways to success, but it's important that manager sets the tone and the vision, because that's, as you move down into coaches and players and staff, I mean, that's the vision that everyone is marching towards, and so it's a leadership role, first of all. And then I think the second factor is really making the best decisions you can given the constraints that you're dealing with. And what I mean by that is, you know, you're not going to go out and find fantastic trades where they're lopsided in your favor. Maybe that happens once a career, but you're not going to consistently do that. So all you're trying to do is really limit the mistakes to the extent that you can, maybe gain a percent or two every time you make a transaction or a decision like that. And so that requires a decision-making framework that prevents you from making those mistakes and optimizes the ones that you do. But I think then the constraints is important too. You know, not all teams can spend to the salary cap. Some ownership says, hey, here's your budget. You decide what to do with it. So now it's making decisions regarding how's the best way to deploy my resources. And I think if you look across and you take those factors and you say, okay, how does, you know, Ray Shiro and Jim Rutherford in Pittsburgh, Stan Bowman in Chicago, you know, some of the general managers that won multiple times, you start to see they did that really well. And it's often tough to do after you win and to keep it together. But I think to the extent you can keep that vision and that mission from the top aligned, that allows you to sometimes reload and get multiple Stanley Cups.
The salary cap is a guideline that all teams and their general managers, of course, must follow. How has that evolved since its implementation? Excuse me.
Yeah, you know, I think in the last few years, you've actually seen, you know, from a raw number standpoint, as far as where the salary cap ceiling is at, a bit of a tapering off. So part of that is The revenues of the league aren't growing as fast as they did in early years. Some of that's related to exchange rates and a number of different, you know, financial aspects that are pretty in the weeds. But I think the story is really then about how are teams responding to that. And if you went back to the last collective bargaining agreement a number of years ago, there was an opportunity to kind of make one of your mistakes go away. The compliance buyout, which was get out of jail free, take a contract, and almost just make it disappear. And so that allowed general managers to get rid of kind of their worst mistake and gave them some relief. But I think if now you run out 5, 6, 7 years from that opportunity, you've got a number of these mistakes that are getting really painful for some of these teams. You combine that with a salary cap that's not growing as fast as maybe some of these teams expected. And you saw this summer, there was a lot of contention around just how teams even get to the salary cap, let alone add any talent, let alone maintain the team they had last year. They'd love to be in that position. They're just trying to figure out how do we not bleed out all of these players in order to get under the ceiling. So I think as that evolves, it will be interesting to see what happens in the next CBA. Is there another opportunity for one of these compliance buyouts? Maybe that helps. Maybe it's the idea of the ceiling flying up with a new TV deal that gives some relief. But I think we're in a bit of a crunch time here, and you're seeing a number of teams really see that pain this summer and have to pay the price in order to get that flexibility that they need to ahead of the new season in a few weeks here.
To make the pain worse, the salary cap came in at $81.5 million as opposed to the $83 million that it was originally projected. How much of a shock was this for general managers in getting under that ceiling that you mentioned?
Yeah, you know, I think the timing is the tough part. I don't know that it's a huge impact, you know, if you look at the ability to go out in the free agent market. Sure, if you had $20, $30 million available this summer, like Colorado Avalanche, you can take advantage of opportunities because now there's teams that maybe can't get that free agent that they were after or can't retain that player that they thought they had the money set aside for. But I think the timing is really the tough part, and that happens most years in that. The salary cap is based on a forecasted revenue for the following season, and that is anchored in what did we do the prior season. And so until you wrap up the season, until you finish the Stanley Cup, until you count all the numbers there, you don't even know what that is. And they can forecast it, but you really don't have the final numbers until late June. And then these teams have to turn around, like you said, with a different number and a different expectation, and in a matter of days go out to the draft and the free agent market and have to remake their team. So I think that's tough. That said, these are professional organizations, and I would think your contingency planning against anything like that, knowing this is a possibility, what will we do if we don't have the $1.5 or $2 million? Okay, here's plan B, here's plan C. So I think that's you know, something that at least some of the intelligent teams are prepared for, and you saw them execute that. I thought Toronto did a fantastic job. I thought Tampa Bay did a fantastic job. It's no coincidence those are strong franchises because they're always very well prepared, and then they execute with that flexibility given whatever the constraints are, and wherever that number lands, they've got a plan that they can quickly move forward and execute.
The Maple Leafs, as well as other teams, have utilized some interesting tactics this offseason. How have buried contracts, the long-term injured reserve, and other tactics been utilized this summer to prepare for the cap crunch?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like the tax code, right, where you have these rules in place, and then you have a number of these professionals that are very highly paid, very intelligent, figure out how do we get around them. What are the loopholes? You know, Lou Lamoriello, Toronto with Kyle Dubas and Brandon Pridham and Lawrence Gilman there, three very, very intelligent guys. I think what teams are doing is saying, hey, how can we, yes, there is a salary cap, but what can we do to give ourselves either maximum flexibility or create the opportunity to react to uncertainties? I mean, if you look at Toronto and Tampa, as we mentioned, both are sitting on very highly paid star players, restricted free agents that are still their property but are likely going to command a lot of money, but they don't even know 3 weeks out what those dollars are really going to be. And so they have to act. They can't wait around and not add any players. So they've got to start to think about, all right, what do we do? How do we be proactive? And, for example, Tampa Bay said, okay, well, Ryan Callahan and JT Miller, highly paid players. Callahan's case, he's an injured guy that now is forced to retire. It's a probably half-hour conversation to get into the minutia there, but I think the point is, they took advantage of being proactive. They moved those guys out as quickly as possible. maybe that wasn't necessary, and we go 6 months from now and we say, hey, they didn't have to get rid of Callahan, and they didn't have to give up what they did to push JT Miller out the door, despite the fact they got a first-round pick. I mean, Toronto paid a first-round pick to get rid of Patrick Marleau. And so, you know, you can always have hindsight as 2020. You can always question these later, but I think it's better to be proactive, give yourself that flexibility, especially with all the uncertainty around the restricted free agents this summer. I think that creates a bit of an unknown, especially as we get closer and closer to the camp, as to really where those land and how the dominoes fall once maybe the first name like a Mitch Marner comes off the board.
Those restricted free agents, you brought them up, and boy, has it been insane with those situations. It's been an unreal offseason. I've never seen it before. How do you see these restricted free agent situations playing out?
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen it before in hockey, that's for sure. But I think we've seen the same evolution if anyone follows baseball over the last couple seasons, where baseball teams are obviously far ahead of the National Hockey League in data and analytics and understanding where value is and how you compensate for value. And what they decided a number of years ago was, why are we paying for a guy that's 33 years old that's had 7 or 8 fantastic seasons? That doesn't mean he's going to have 7 or 8 fantastic seasons going forward. It's you're paying for historical production, and I think teams have realized, hey, I'd rather get the guy when he's 20 years old and pay for that future production. I might be wrong, I might be right, but at least then you're paying for future production. And I think as baseball went through that, you saw the same kind of an off season where a number of players were left hanging. It was like 200 players or something a couple years ago that were just sitting there. It's not that that extent in the NHL, but I think this is that first step where you're seeing these players say, hey, wait a minute, Mitch Marner, you know, leading scorer on the team, why do I have to take the, you know, the bridge deal that was so-called mandatory? You know, I'm the leading scorer, I should be compensated as such, especially when you've given Austin Matthews that kind of money. So I think it's a shift, and I think when you have some of those big chips in play, your agent doesn't want to be the one that says, okay, you know, let's sign your deal, let's hope it's in line, and then you turn around and Mitch Marner gets $13 million, and now as an agent, you look bad because you didn't get your client all that he could. So I think that's why we're seeing this kind of widespread waiting game, where they're saying, hey, let's see when the first domino falls. Likely that's Mitch Marner. But if not, you'll see someone move probably around the Labor Day time frame, and at that point, they'll start to fall in line, because the risk of an agent being kind of embarrassed by getting the wrong number for his client will go down, and you'll see just chaos over a 5 to 10 day stretch. So at least heading into the season, we'll have some activity and news that we probably don't usually have, but certainly makes for an interesting and stressful offseason if you're a general manager of one of these teams.
For those listening on our archive in the future, thank you so much for tuning in. We will be continuing for the next few minutes exclusively on Facebook Live at our official page, Destination Hockey. Head over there for the full stream, including an interview with Noah Dobson. Moving on to specific players, do you personally think there are any financial situations that could force a player to be moved to another team?
Are you referring to financial situations with the team or individuals or which level of financial?
Just teams. Look at Winnipeg. They don't really have too much cap space. Patrick Laine is saying some things to the media. It looks like money might be a reason why Laine or Kyle Connor are moved. Do you see a team not having enough cap space, a team not having the budget, potentially forcing a player to be traded to another team?
I mean, I think Winnipeg's a good example. I'm not sure that there's a long-term future or ever was going to be with Patrick Laine there. It just doesn't seem like they've been having a strong relationship over the last 12 to 18 months. So I think that may have been inevitable. But, you know, in the Winnipeg case, they want to add to their defense, but they can't take the risk that you lock yourself into a contract situation where now the threat of an offer sheet comes into play. So I think that's the wild card for a number of these teams. You know, as I look at most of the league, I think most are in good shape. You know, Pittsburgh's in a bit of a bind, but they've got a team that you could go into the season and say you feel pretty good about. There's most of those changes have been made, but I think where it gets interesting is as you get closer to the season, maybe a team has one or two or three of these significant players that haven't signed yet, and they've got to either give in to the demands or start to think of what's our plan B and what do we do if we can't get that to happen. That's where it gets interesting, because I think then you've got maybe some opportunistic general managers out there sitting, you know, hey, Lou Lamoriello, Mark Bergevin in Montreal just showed us he's willing to do an offer sheet. You know, as you get tighter and tighter with these teams up and up, up against the cap, when they still have these players out there and susceptible, that's where we could see an offer sheet happen again. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'd say that's where I'd get concerned and create the scenario, like you said, where a team suddenly has to shed assets that they otherwise wouldn't like to do.
A need for a new collective bargaining agreement, an increasing salary cap, and larger restricted free agent deals are leading the NHL into a new era. Where do you see this league heading within the near future?